Arkadan Greer. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Briyantara Vani Nardita. Kutumbika Krodhyati Vaijanaya. Chalankachit Kantaka Sharkarangrir. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Briyantara Vani Nardita. Kumbhika Krujati Vaijanaya. Katumbika Krujati Vaijanaya. Chalan Kachit Kantaka Sarkarangrir. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Bhantara Vani Nardita. Kutumbika Krujati Vai Janaya. Chalan Kachit Kantaka Sarkanangrir. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Dhyantara Vani Nardita. Katumbika Krujati Vaijanaya. Chalan Kachit Kantaka Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Dhyantara Vani Nardita. Kautumbika Krujati Vaijanaya. Chalan Kachit Kautaka. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Vyantara Vani Nardita. Kutumbika Vika. Chalan Kachit Kautaka. Nagara Rukshur Vimana Ivaste. Pade Pade Vyantara Vani Nardita. Chalan Wandering. Kwachit. Sometimes. Kantaka Sharkara. Pierced by thorns and small stones. Angrihi. Whose feet. Naga. The hills. Ararukshuho. One desiring to climb. Vimana. Disappointed. Eva. Like. Aste. Becomes. Pade pade. Step by step. Abhyantara. Within the abdomen. Vanina. By the strong fire of appetite. Arditaha. Being fatigued and aggrieved. Kautumbikaha. A person living with his family members. Krudyati. Becomes angry. Vai. Certainly. Janaya. At the family members. Translation: sometimes the merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns on the mountain. Being pricked by them, he becomes very aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The ambitious conditioned soul wants to be very happy in this material world with his family, but he is compared to a traveler in the forest who desires to climb a hill full of thorns and small stones. As stated in the previous verse, the happiness derived from society, friendship, and love is like a drop of water in the scorching heat of the desert. One may want to become very great and powerful in society, but this is like attempting to climb a hill full of thorns. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares one's family to high mountains. Becoming happy in their association is like a hungry man's endeavoring to climb a mountain full of thorns. About 99.9% of the population is unhappy in family life, despite all the attempts being made to satisfy the family members. In the Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of the family members, there's actually no family life. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of their parents, especially in the age of Kali, family life is being reduced. Everyone is becoming self-centered because that is the law of nature. Even if one has sufficient money to maintain a family, the situation is such that no one is happy in family life. Consequently, according to the Varnashram institution, one has to retire from family life in middle age. Pancha shordvam vanam brajet. One should voluntarily retire from family life at the age of 50 and go to Vrindavan or a forest. This is recommended by Srila Prahlad Maharaj. Nasadu manye suravarya dehinam sadasamud vignadiyam asat grahat hidvat mapatam griham andakupam vanam gato yad dharim ashayeta. There is no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. One must go to the Vrindavan forest and take shelter of Govinda. That will make one happy. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is therefore constructing a Krishna Balaram temple to invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere that will help one become elevated to the transcendental world and return home back to Godhead. Another sentence in this verse is very significant. Kautumbika krudyati vijanaya. When one's mind is disturbed in so many ways, he satisfies himself by becoming angry with his poor wife and children. The wife and children are naturally dependent on the father, but the father, being unable to maintain the family properly, becomes mentally distressed and therefore chastises the family members unnecessarily. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.9, Achina Dara Dravina Yasyanti Giri Kananam. Being disgusted with family life, one separates from the family by divorce or some other means. If one has to separate, why not separate willingly? Systematic separation is better than forced separation. Forced separation cannot make anyone happy, but by mutual consent or by Vedic arrangement, one must separate from his family affairs at a certain age and fully depend on Krishna. That makes one's life successful. Now, Prabhupada is saying some strong things here. And persons hearing these strong things might take exception to what he's saying. So sometimes his language is really strong and sometimes it's more moderate. For the benefit of those that haven't been attending these morning classes, this section of the Bhagavatam, this is Jad Bharat continuing his instructions to the king, Rahugana. Jad Bharat is the third life after Bharat Maharaj, who died thinking of a deer, so he became a deer in life number two, and life number three, he didn't make that mistake again. He acted as if he was an avaduta, but Supersoul maintained his superlative Krishna consciousness, so that when he was Jad Bharat, the son of a Brahmana, he behaved as if he was an avaduta, a madman. But he wasn't. He was just not going to make the same mistake again. And long narration of what his life as Jad Bharat was like, but fast forward and here he is having a conversation with the king in the area where he was living. And the king also had the impression that he's an avaduta or a dullard, and was chastising him for not carrying his palanquin properly, etc. And then Jad Bharat began speaking transcendental knowledge to the king, who was flabbergasted. You're not a dullard by any means. You're most exalted Paramahansa realized person. And please forgive me for my not understanding your position. And then he asks him, all these words you said was pretty high, could you say it again? Kind of like, so I can understand it. So he says it again. And then this is continuing from there, where the transcendental position will be enhanced if one is sufficiently detached from the temporary. Conversely, one who is attached to the temporary cannot become very elevated in the pursuit of transcendence. And the king, Rahugana, was too much attached to the temporary. That was essentially the problem. So the king had an attraction for transcendence, for Krishna, but his affinity for the temporary was holding him back. So this chapter, from the very beginning, is a metaphor of a merchant who goes into the forest to get stuff that he can then sell for a profit. Sometimes it's instead spoken of a conditioned soul in a general sense. Sometimes, like here, it's a traveler. But the whole narration starts with a merchant in the forest. In the forest, the merchant or the traveler or the conditioned soul is the king or anybody that's attached to the temporary. So the intent is to show quachit, 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 sometimes, sometimes, sometimes. The temporary brings the expectation of happiness in involving the senses with the temporary, in the mood of finding happiness with that temporary sensation. It brings misery. Bhagavad Gita teaching now expanded in a whole chapter. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. One expects sukha and one gets dukkha. By samsparshaja, by the senses contacting sense objects. So he's listing different sense objects, and the intention of the traveler or the conditioned soul or the merchant to find sukha, and he gets dukkha. That's the context. So in this verse, often there's four different things that he's making, illustrating. Here it's in the forest, climbing a mountain. So in the purport, there's two metaphorical representations of the mountain. One of them is trying to become a big man, trying to become worldly accomplished and recognized. So that's a mountain. The other metaphor or application of this is family life. So either family life or climbing the corporate ladder, as they say, is I want to enjoy the temporary. And in that climbing of the mountain, the metaphor says, due to inadequate footwear, the mountain that has thorns and sharp, small stones, one's feet are pained and it becomes unbearable. So those sharp stones, small stones, and thorns, that's the unwanted part that goes along with the wanted part. Because in this material world, you got to take the good with the bad, man. Because wherever there's this, there's that. It's a place of duality. So the happiness that one is expecting in the pursuit of some exalted position in this world leads to misery. Just a little sharing, kind of over here, and then we'll come back. Here in St. Louis, I discussed something that started in Chicago, which was there is such a thing as expectations that are spiritual. And there's everything has a spiritual counterpart. And there's expectations that are material, and devotees generally are encouraged, don't expect something material. But that doesn't mean don't expect anything. So the expectation that's spiritual is Krishna is very kind. I have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and Krishna is very kind. And that's a realistic expectation. It's a spiritual expectation. Now, how Krishna may interact with me may not be according to how I would design it. And that how Krishna may interact with me may look like misfortune, or may look like whatever it looks like. And I go, oh, Krishna made a mistake. Or Krishna's unkind, or, you know, why did this happen? So, because I have a material expectation. So I'm going to be preparing, someone's going to help me, a general lecture, maybe like, you know, a Sunday feast type of lecture, and I'm going to call it Great Expectations for a Western audience. This is because I spoke over this past weekend about Western outreach. So this is just an example. Those of you from India, you probably don't know who Charles Dickens is, but our young people, they know. Huh? You know. Okay. So he wrote many books. He was a writer from England in the early and mid-1800s. And one of his books was called Great Expectations. I didn't read the book, but I know the basic storyline. The basic storyline is the main character, the protagonist, his name is Pip. And the long, you know, British authors are really complicated, but one of the things that kids like about the lady that's the author of Harry Potter, it's so complicated. But they know all the names of all the people and this and that and the other thing, and, you know, so British authors are really, really, really detailed. So without all the details, he develops some attraction for a woman, and then he gets some idea that he's going to get some good situation in his life, and he thinks it's because the woman has done this. The woman, he's like woo woo, he likes her, and so he goes on this great expectation journey of becoming a successful person, the mountain. And long story short, doesn't work out that way. And along the way, he meets somebody that's an ordinary person, like he was, and he worked for that ordinary person, but he's thinking, oh, this doesn't make it in the, you know, the mountain climbing program. And so, you know, details and details. He leaves that situation and gets smashed. And he, the, so he realizes the Great Expectation program, the mountain climbing program, wasn't a good program. And he wishes that he didn't start that journey. Better a simple life. Now this is not better a Krishna conscious life, just better a simple life. That this nice person that was a simple man, kind of like a common laborer person. He was really a friend. In our sense, that the person who is really our friend is Krishna, and also those who remind us of Krishna, that's our best friend. Krishna is our best friend. And those who remind us of Krishna, they're their best friend. And someone who reminds you of Krishna may, you know, grab you by the shoulder and shake you and say, hey, mom, heading for the ditch. But that's your best friend. And get back on the road to Krishna. Now, it doesn't have to be done roughly, but even if it's done roughly, whatever it is, that's our best friend. And because behind that person is your best friend. Voktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Suhrid, dearmost friend. And that's Krishna. If anyone that reminds you of Krishna, that's your dearmost friend. So we should be friendly to all living entities and remind them of Krishna. You have to do it in a way that they don't like freak out, but in a suitable to time, place, circumstance, remind people of Krishna. So this is the mountain metaphor, back to the text. It's family life, and the expectation happiness will come in family life. Now, Prabhupada is saying 99.9% of the population are unhappy in family life. Well, somebody may say, hey, I know people are very happy in family life. And even in America, I mean, it's changing. But, you know, old couples, and you know, we've been married for 50 years. We're happily married 50 years. So, to stay together with somebody for 50 years, it takes more than being attached. It's, you know, have to be able to be reasonably compatible. Now, happy, that's another thing. But, you know, some people... So what is that happiness? Going back to the previous verse, which Prabhupada refers to here in this purport, it's temporary. It's like, that's compared from the previous verse, a drop of water in a desert. So there's a drop of water in the desert. But that's not what happiness is. It's inadequate. There's something that keeps people together. And it may be so many maybes. Commonly, there's some synergy in terms of their understanding of the goal of life. Some sense of the goal of life having to do with godliness that helps, that's glue that helps people stick together. Pursuit of godliness together. Mode of goodness helps to maintain things. Mode of passion is more common than mode of goodness. So that's specifically in this age. And that's where Prabhupada goes in his commenting about modern society, particularly in the West. But the particularly in the West is somehow covering the world. You know, the religious principles of the culture, the Vedic culture in India, and because I visit China, the culture in China, it's similarly changing by Western influence. You know, the some people just buy into it. The Muslim group, they really don't like it. And they trash it, and they torture people that do anything that looks like Western culture without details. Because, you know, that's their way of dealing with degradation of values and culture. You just chop people. But it's very strong. That the passion is very strong. So that's this climbing of the mountain. Expecting happiness. That's mode of passion. Then the second metaphor used in this verse is a person that doesn't have sufficient financial base and therefore is embarrassed or hungry or both, and then becomes angry with family members just to like vent his frustration. And then the family members suffer because of the anger of the person who is unable to financially maintain himself and his family. But these things happen. Someone's speaking, it's all over the world, not just financial embarrassment, but people that act angry, behind that anger, there's some trouble in their heart. And they just express that trouble in their heart in the form of, you know, violence. Behind the violence is a troubled heart. Doesn't mean that the violence is okay or the anger is okay, but we can at least understand behind it, kamesha, krodesha. There's a strong desire that's unfulfilled, or someone has been hurt or abused or mistreated or whatever, and they're in this now angry space. And now they have tools to express their anger. The internet, or guns, or so many other things. So the root of the problem, the solution to the problem is not gun control. The solution to the problem is not cut people's fingers off, because they'll find another way to vent their anger. I was visiting Los Angeles one time, and young American fellow, I never met him before, came, you know, bounding up to me and saying, you know, you have any advice for me? I spend too much time on trashy stuff on the internet. So I tried giving up my computer, but my hands find another computer, and it goes, you know, just, and it's, you know, besides it's time wasting, it's consciousness polluting, I know it's not good, what should I do? Or one of my visits at Southern Illinois University, maybe you remember, at the end of the program, when American Girl came up, it was just like the topic was something really simple, like karma and reincarnation or something, you know, really simple and straightforward. She said, you have no idea what it's like being a millennial. I don't have time to even doing my yoga. All this Facebook and responding to everybody, doing it. I don't have time I study. Millennial. You remember the girl? Yeah. You know, but there's an addiction to doing that which makes you miserable. There's a scientific explanation behind it. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that's released when somebody has something that becomes addictive. And then you're addicted, you're hooked. You can't. So the conclusion with Jed Barrett's explanation to Maharaj Rahugana is go on the path of self-realization. Now circling back to our Thursday evening class, that takes practice. Because happiness in the mode of passion, happiness in the mode of ignorance, it's like falling off a log. You don't have to take, not too difficult, stand on a log, don't pay attention to what you're doing, and you fall off the log. Real easy. But practice of controlling the mind, controlling the senses, such that you don't just go up and then come back down again, you stay up. You stay, and it means taking shelter. means finding a higher taste. But the difficulty for King Rahugana and the difficulty for victims of the age of Kali is they don't know what that higher taste is. Or they get relief from the distress and then they go by devotional service, because there's four types of pious people that render service to Krishna, and they want relief from distress. So when the distress is relieved, thank you Krishna, see you later, I'm checking out again. And then so Maya comes, oh now I'm distressed, Krishna. Then so the unsteadiness of bhakti has to do with not actually having the right purpose, or this principle-based life. So we need association of devotees that can help us stay on the path to Krishna and do those things that are going to help the mind and senses become controlled. That's practice without compromise, or cultivate like that at least. Practice. There may be some slip up, but you practice in good association. And the path of self-realization is open. That's what Jed Bart wants for the king. The king gets it. And he leaves this worldly consciousness behind. In the end, doesn't stop being king, but he leaves the worldly consciousness behind and then continues. There's some other points, Prahlad Maharaj's description of go to the forest. Vanam gato yad dharim ashrayeta. So Prabhupada created Krishna consciousness movement. Specifically, he's mentioning, apparently at this time, the Krishna Balaram temple wasn't completed, fifth canto. But he wanted to complete it, and the purpose he wanted to complete it was so persons could come and take the impression of the deities and hear the kirtan, and hear the topics of Krishna discussed in the temple, and become purified, become released from that bondage of the material contamination. Compassion of a great acharya. So let's see if there's any discussion. Do you have the portable microphone? That's your service. But give it to him, let him do it. Young man.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. We learn from Prabhupada's teachings that the Paramatma is always with the spirit soul, so practically speaking, it is impossible for the Paramatma or Krishna to abandon the spirit soul. But we also learned that the ten offenses of the holy name, how they can block bhakti for someone temporarily, and that in one sense might feel like somebody has been necessarily, maybe not necessarily abandoned by Krishna, but lost his strive to get closer to Krishna. So my question is it healthy to have a fear that our relationship with Krishna might be not necessarily
covered?
Covered, yeah. Is that a healthy fear?
Yes.
Is that,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Prabhupada said that's his concern also. Not exactly fear, but caution. Mm-hmm. You can, yeah. Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers says, I don't need anything. But he also says, because I can just remember you. But he also says in one of his prayers, I'm afraid of materialistic life. Not life, but materialistic life. Mm-hmm. A life of forgetfulness. So he has forgetfulness. He has remembrance. But he's concerned about forgetfulness. Materialistic life is a life of forgetfulness. Mm-hmm.
So you think he has
same senses, same sense object, spiritual life. Same senses, same sense object, materialistic life. Forgetfulness. Remembrance. Mm-hmm. Manmana. Okay.
And unless there's somebody else, I have one more question.
Go ahead. You got the mic.
Last time we talked about, I think it was last Friday, if I'm not mistaken, was it Friday or...
Whenever it was.
Saturday, it was a Bhagavatam class, and we talked about, we mentioned depression.
Depression.
Yes, we mentioned, and I was wondering, there's a lot of people, maybe not all depressed people, but there's a good portion of the depressed people that actually claim that one of the reasons they're depressed is because they feel like they cannot find, that nothing really makes sense, and that there's no really meaning behind anything. They cannot see any in one sense, they cannot find any taste in the material world. And I was wondering, is this because, like, in one sense their material credit card of enjoyment has been run out already, so they don't have any possibility?
Modes of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance is the precipitant for depression.
Hmm.
It's not the credit card ran out, or debit card ran out.
Yeah.
It's mode of ignorance.
So what's
it, it can cycle, just like it says in chapter 14. The modes of nature are always in competition with one another. So supposing I've got a debit card that's really loaded up, mm-hmm. and I associate with some bad people. Then that bad association brings forgetfulness, and down I go.
Yeah.
Bad association. Okay? Here, in the front.
Hare Krishna. Within ISKCON, we see that many grihastha couples do not renounce family life even when they're older in age. And
that's,
I was wondering,
right.
Is that a bad thing, or how should we...
Well, it's not exactly a bad thing, good thing. You know if that's a nice way to characterize bad, good. Vanaprastha is a stage. And vana, it's not well understood. It's not, you know, there's not a vanaprastha ministry. Like, you know, when people get to that stage of life, what are they supposed to do? Where's the examples? There's examples of good grihasthas, there are examples of brahmacharis, there's examples of sannyasis. Where's the example? And the teaching is also less than clear. Go to the seventh canto and hear about the Vanaprastha ashram, and it's like, whoa. That's a Satya Yuga model. Doesn't work. Sorry, Charlie, doesn't work. So what do you do? Carry on. But, you know, the carry on is not just because there isn't a good model and good teachings. It's attachment. So then steps in the direction of diminishing and increasing. Go to places of pilgrimage. Increase one's direct activities of hearing and chanting and serving. Ideal is at a temple, but even if it's not at a temple, increase service. Increase service to Krishna. Direct activities, the direct nine processes of bhakti. More of that and less of the comforts of home, without detailing what that means. Move in that direction. Now, you know, good or bad, one's missing the opportunity. In that sense, you could say it's unfortunate. But good fortune is one hears and one moves in the direction of what one hears. It's imperative. There's a certain sannyasi who I won't mention his name. Whenever he visits a Alachua, he goes on a rampage about, you know, Florida retirement versus vanaprastha. You know, maintaining the attachments of family in your old age as opposed to pursuing the principle of vanaprastha. Anyway, I'll leave it to your imagination who that sannyasi is. But, you know, that one way is to, like, whack people, and other is just to, in principle, read Prabhupada's books, and when you read Prabhupada's books, you understand this is for your well-being. It's kindness. And here it is. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So this is sort of a parenting question, as well as I'm asking from children's point of view, so both the things are there. Probably I hope I would be able to frame it properly. So when we try to teach children that happiness is temporary, don't get attached to it, they are sometimes attached to doing same thing again and again and wasting so much time into that.
Yes, sometimes.
So we feel like a little bit insecure that they will get into this ditch. So we try to explain to them that this is not forever and you should move on to something else. So teaching them like that, one time my oldest one expressed to me that she doesn't feel happiness where she's supposed to feel happiness with her friends, where they were all seemingly very happy and I was not even there, present there. So my question is, from my point of view also, I wish to ask Maharaj that there needs to be an impetus which I can tell them that this is the actual happiness.
Well, it's not just a matter of telling them, it's a matter of experiencing it.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the parenting question, it can go on forever. So, the best is parenting when, from the very beginning. From the very beginning. And then if parenting starts at a later stage, then comes the, you know, the intervention, because there's the ditch. But best if it's at the very beginning. But when there's a value that parents hold that the children don't hold, or they hold on the one hand, but on the other hand, friendship amongst peers weighs very heavily, and the friendship amongst peers that are unregulated by the codes of anything looks like they're having fun. And so I want to have friends, I want to be accepted, so that's important to me. And so that starts to erode the values that may even be embraced. That's the association factor. And I don't want to spend more time on this because parenting can go on for 5 hours and still not concluded. So, sorry to be abrupt like that, but I would suggest, rather than we have an extended discussion, that there are parenting conferences where topics such as this are discussed by parents. What seems to work well, what doesn't seem to work well, and some opportunities for the children of parents to have an opportunity to associate with other wholesome children, either their age or other young people who get it. You know, they went through that and they're on the other side of that, but they speak the same language. So they understand, and you know, the language is the same. It's not like, you know, it's not like hearing from a parent. It's hearing from someone that's close to their age. And it's another experience. So those kinds of, not just Krishna conscious families with parents, it's just in the world these days, a parenting principle is having some kind of a mentor that's a young person other than mom and dad. Then, you know, the circle broadens, but, you know, a person of character that the parents invite in. And the child feels comfortable with the person, and the person has character, and they know how to not push, they know not how to not, you know, they know how to cross that territory, and they may not do it perfectly also. Mm-hmm. But you know, the parenting topic is really, really big and not easily summed up in a 3-minute answer to a question in class.
Thank you very much.
Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question from yesterday evening class, just for a clarification.
Okay.
So after pursuing the bhakti, we fall into the categories that we discussed yesterday, you know, bhakti in the mode of goodness, bhakti in the mode of passion, bhakti in the mode of ignorance. So that's, it's because of the tendency that one has still be after pursuing bhakti by, you know, shukarti, but still we don't get the pure...
Excuse me, I missed a word. Practicing bhakti by sympathy is the word?
Oh, no. But sukriti we...
Sukriti.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, but still you...
this is the question from last night.
Yeah.
Being rephrased. Okay. So keep going. I don't know where you're going.
Okay. So, but that's what I understood like yesterday class, like, you know, still we fall into these three categories. Even after, you know, when we, by fortunate, we pursue bhakti, but still we fall into this category because of
the
different
categories?
Personality.
Which are the three categories?
The bhakti
to?
That's been followed by the, practiced by the in mode of goodness, in mode of passion, in mode of ignorance. That's what the understanding, Maharaj, like, that's what it happens. Like, since I don't have a full purity in my heart, but still, even though I pursue bhakti, I still may fall into any one of these categories. That's understanding.
Can I respond?
Sure.
The modes, two things. The modes, chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, the modes are always in competition for supremacy. So a mode in this moment may be a different mode in that moment, may be a different mode in the next moment. So those categories are not buckets. By that I mean you're not in this bucket, that bucket. There's exhibition of bhakti influenced by this mode that looks like that. And there's a blend. It's not like, you know, pure ignorance or pure passion, rare. And even if it's momentarily this one or that one, the modes are competing for supremacy. It's not, so don't think, my advice is, just editing your question, don't think of these as like buckets. You're either in this one or you're in that one. As the word category seems to imply. It's a tendency. Bhakti influenced or knowledge influenced by, happiness influenced by, looks like this, looks like that, looks like the other. There may be a general directional type of tendency like this or like that or like the other. And it's not so much, so now back to the yesterday evening thing of Sukriti. Association of sadhu, whether one knows it or not, it's beneficial. You can say, one can say, Sukriti. This, like, you know, Srila Prabhupada walking on the earth planet. Perhaps people never heard of him, never met him. Just his presence on earth creates auspiciousness, favorable. Or they saw him from a distance, or whatever, whatever, whatever. And so that's an indelible asset. But that's bhakti, anmukti sukriti. This is now using Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description. And then slowly, 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 someone may come to the position where they actually say, yes, I want to explore this some more. I'll give a little example. This is from Bhakti Chaitanya Swami. Some of you know Bhakti Chaitanya Swami. He said, he's actually born in Australia, but he had a job in London. And when he had his job in London, he would walk to his job from where he lived, and it was on a place during the time of day when the Hare Krishna devotees would go along, you know, Soho Street or whatever the streets are. So he would see them coming and he'd go to the other side. But he was hearing. He had an aversion. But obviously, something was inside that wasn't aversion. It was just a conditioned phase. And by that unknowingly, exactly what Prabhupada says, whether one understands or doesn't understand, it creates auspiciousness. So the loud chanting of the holy name is for that purpose. And so we engage in loud chanting of the holy name in public forums, because it creates an atmosphere of auspiciousness, good for human society. And good for human society, good for all living entities that hear the sound. So this misfortune, that's creating good fortune just by the sound, and other ways that unknowing benefit can be achieved. Prasadam distribution in the workplace, or food for life, or a restaurant, or Krishna lunch, or, you know, this thing, that thing. Prasadam distribution. I remember conducting a festival, Madhuha Prabhu, with his festival of India. We had several summers. We had, he was engaged in like 10 different festivals all around New York City and some colleges and things. It's like, so one of them was at City Hall. City Hall is very near Wall Street in Manhattan. And so we were at the southern tip of City Hall, set up, having kirtan, this and that. a group of men came because we had nice prasadam, and the man was, you know, with his plate in one hand, the spoon in the other hand, saying, you know, let me share some recommendation with you. You people have a bad reputation, but everybody likes your food. So do lots of food distribution. People will start to like you. They'll look past the bad reputation thing. You know, the bad reputation had to do with people that were doing book distribution in an aggressive manner. You know, disrespectful of people's sensibilities, trampling all over them just to get the book out. So, here's a man that if we had approached him to take a book, he would have said something unpleasant probably, and it wouldn't have been a yes. So how to turn the no into a yes? Or how, so how to help people come to the position where voluntarily, willingly, they accept? So that's this agyata sukriti thing, but it's, you know, it's association of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, sadhu sangha. And what do sadhus do? They do Krishna bhajan, bhajana kriya. So by one means or another means, give association. Whether people know or they don't know, we don't go way out on a limb and the limb breaks, but we do things that are safe and in good association with other devotees and give devotee a life of bhakti to others. You have to be a little creative sometimes. Anyway, does that answer your question? Yeah?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Maharaj, this is regarding the expectation. Like in Bhagavad Gita, it mentioned four kind of people comes and take shelter of Krishna. One of them is...
Well, four types of pious people render devotional service.
One of them is distressed.
Yeah.
I'm speaking about myself. So I recognize there are different configuration of this four types within me while taking shelter. That's right.
Sure.
One of them I'm focusing on is distress. So my shelter towards Krishna as a distress to relieve from it as an expectation.
Yeah, that's right. That's a material expectation.
Material expectation. And as you spoke, don't expect Krishna, expectation from devotees, rather expect just the kindness from Krishna. How do I reconcile this?
You got to work from where you are. You can't like close your eyes and imagine to be where you aren't. You are where you are. Your eyes are open. You have an expectation. And as long as there's an expectation, then the satisfaction within will not be what your experience is. Ahaituki pratyataya yatmasu prasidati. That satisfaction within will not be your experience. Therefore, it's not going to sustain. The distress diminishes, Krishna's kind, and the distress diminishes. It may ramp up for a bit, but you know, over a period of time, it diminishes. Like this question yesterday about it takes time. So over time, it diminishes. That's our experience. The light goes on, the sun rises in the morning, and the darkness is dissipated. But then comes complacency. And soon as there's lackening of submission, of taking shelter, darkness comes back. Like a dimmer switch. We don't have to like take our hand to the switch and make it dark again or diminish the light. Just slackening in the shelter taking because I had my expectation that was material. The material expectation became, to a degree at least, fulfilled. See you later, Krishna. Fair weather friend, it's called. You heard that phrase? It's an American phrase. You know that one.
I've heard.
Yeah.
And I have one more sharing, yeah. Maharaj.
Okay.
Maharaj, when you visit St. Louis about 15 days in a year, where I get a close service, which I really relish them. The desire to have this eternally, how it will be fulfilled?
Go back to Godhead. Ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.